Hello and welcome to the Make Better Photos and Videos podcast. I am Ross. Hey everybody, Gordon's off on vacation for a couple of weeks, so unfortunately, it's just me for the next couple of episodes. This time, I want to cover the subject of focus stacking. For those who may be unfamiliar with the idea, focus stacking is a workflow that involves taking a number of images, having different focus points, and then blending them together to deliver a much greater depth of field than would be possible in a single image. While we use different focus points to build the collection of images, what we are in fact really doing is stacking depth of field. The reason I make this distinction is going to become pretty evident fairly quickly. As we all know, depth of field is affected by three criteria. Most often, we think of the lens aperture, where a large aperture delivers minimum depth of field and a small aperture delivers maximum depth of field. We also know that the focal length of the lens relative to the sensor also impacts depth of field. The larger the sensor, the more depth of field. We also know that the focal length of the lens relative to the sensor impacts depth of field. The greater the focal length, the less depth of field at any given distance or aperture than with a lens with a lesser focal length. The third piece, and only considered regularly by those who do close-up photography, is that as distance between the sensor and the subject diminishes, so too does the depth of field, regardless of focal length or aperture. Let's start with some concrete examples. I'm going to use data pulled straight from PhotoPills for this portion. This way you could look it up for yourself if you wished. For the purposes of this discussion, I'm going to be using a full frame sensor for all calculations, as well as a fixed camera to subject focus distance of 1 foot. While I will use different focal lengths in my example, remember also that this translates into different angles of view, where the greater the focal length, the lesser the angle of view, meaning the in-camera crop is tighter. Let's start with a 100mm lens. Many folks buy them, they're very, very popular, and typically have a maximum aperture of f2.8. But at f2.8, at a foot, our depth of field is 1/32nd of an inch. So we're going to completely forget about large apertures for this episode entirely. This informs you, obviously, then, that sufficient light and a light level appropriate ISO is going to be required. If we set this lens at f16, we're going to get 1/4 of an inch of depth of field. That's nice, but it's not really enough for much of anything. Note that shutter speed and ISO do not enter into depth of field discussions ever. If I replace the 100mm lens with a 200mm lens at the 1 foot distance and at f16, I'm going to get only 1/32nd of an inch of depth of field. So, probably not the right lens for the job in this case. If I replace the 100mm lens with a 50mm lens at 1 foot distance and set at f16, I will get 1 3/16 of an inch depth of field. But remember, I also talked about angle of view, and I may end up getting more angle of view than I want, which would necessitate some cropping. And when we crop, we lose resolution. As close-up work with wide angles introduces the perception of perspective distortion, I'm not even going to consider a wide angle at all in this episode. So, let's create an imaginary subject to photograph. It could be an insect or a flower. And we're going to have that 100mm lens on the camera, 1/4 of an inch of depth of field at 1 foot, and we're going to work at f16. And we know that whatever subject we choose, we're not going to get the entire subject in focus. But that's not what we want. We want the whole subject in focus. And this means we're going to be doing focus stacking. Earlier, I noted that the common concept of depth of field uses focal length as a determinant. This is true, but within that element, we have to remember that the position of the focus point within the frame is where the measurement actually is made. I'm using photo pills to try to negate that concern because when it says distance to subject, what it really means is distance to focus point. If the focus point changes and changes the distance, then so does the depth of field, increasing as the focus point moves away. In our case, we're going to do something different. Let's consider another example. Same lens. We're going to focus at the closest part of the flower, which is a foot away. At that focus distance, the depth of field is a quarter of an inch, as we've noted. But the depth of the flower that I want totally in focus is actually 4 inches front to back. And this, if I keep the camera in the same position and change the focus, I'm now focusing not only at 1 foot, but I'm also going to be focusing at some point at 1 foot, 4 inches. And that depth of field at that distance is 15/32nds of an inch, nearly double what we had 4 inches closer. So when we decide to do focus stacking, it's beneficial to determine the depth of field at the closest point, as this will determine for us the focus increment, as well as the number of images to be sure that we get everything that we want in focus when we are finished our stacking process. We're also going to try not to move the camera focus point. Instead, we're going to move the camera. Since my depth of field at f/16 at 1 foot distance on the 100mm lens is 1/4 inch, I know that for success in focus stacking, I want 50% depth of field overlap for each image. This tells me that my focus change increment, meaning camera movement change, needs to increase by no more than 1/8 inch with each shot. This means I'm going to make 8 images for each inch of increasing distance away. That's how much I'm going to move the camera. I'm going to move the camera 1 inch. So I'm going to make 8 images. And if I have to cover 4 inches of depth of field, well, then that tells me that the camera is going to move 32 times for 32 images. If our desired depth of field is only 2 inches, well, we would only need 16 images and 16 camera movements. I think you understand the math involved. So how do I accurately make these images? There are cameras that actually do focus stacking in the body, but they're not the norm. So I'm going to talk about a general use camera, one that all of us have of some type. First, we're going to have our camera on a tripod. There are folks who use what's called a bobbing technique to do focus stacking. Their focus distance doesn't change, but they're moving back and forth, effectively moving the camera. But doing this is very trial and error. And for a subject that's only the depth of a snowflake, it could involve 100 or more images and a lot of manual masking. If you can do it, please feel free. But the method I'm going to share with you is more consistent. You have the tripod, you have the camera, and between them you will install what's called a macro focusing rail. Any rail worth having is going to be gear driven and have precision markings on it so you know exactly how much you're moving the camera. One that is not gear driven and one without clear markings is a waste of your money. Also remember, we're talking about very, very small movements, very fine machining, so you are going to get what you pay for. These rails are available in single or dual axis configurations. If you can handle it within your budget, I recommend a dual axis system that will allow the camera to move back and forth and also side to side. The rail will mount to your tripod head and your camera will then mount to the rail assembly. I myself use a Really Right Stuff dual rail kit, but it's admittedly expensive. And I have found that you can get a really good kit, the Oben Macro Focusing Kit, that's OBEN, available for about $136 from B&H Photo Video, and it's an excellent product. You might find others, but you should expect to be paying something in this range for a rail kit worth buying. And for clarity, the Oben kit is a dual axis rail kit. Now let's get to the shooting. We've got our camera mounted on the rail kit. The rail kit is mounted on the tripod. Now we're going to use the gear drive to move the camera to the furthest position away from the subject on the rail that is in line with the lens. We want to do this because we want to be able to use the entire rail to move the camera forward, because we're going to be doing that. This may require you to move the tripod a little bit and do some fine precision focusing, but that's the goal. Get that closest point in focus with lots of travel room on the rail. Now, if you find your alignment left to right is not exactly perfect, that's where that second axis rail comes into play to help you finalize the composition. Now, make sure that your tripod head is locked down and that your left to right rail is locked down if you have one, as the only thing that's going to change from shot to shot is the camera rail position and on the rail in line with the lens. Now confirm your focus on the closest part of the subject. Once that focus is complete, turn autofocus off and ensure that the focus position of the lens never changes on the lens barrel. Some people, including myself, will use gaffer tape to hold the focus ring in place to be sure. I don't want the focus ring to move at all. The lens is now focused on the closest part. My aperture is set to f/16, and so I'm going to use my remote release to eliminate any user-induced camera shake and make the first image. But I'm actually going to suggest make two. Once you've got your two starter images, we're going to call this stack one. We're now going to use the gear, the little knob, on the rail to move the camera 1/8 inch closer to the subject. Why 1/8 inch? Because that's half of the 1/4 inch depth of field we have at the 1 foot distance. Make a new image. This is stack number two. You've now got two of the 32 images we're going to require for our 4 inches of depth. So we're going to repeat that step 30 more times. We want every part of the flower to be tack sharp. When you get to the end, without making any more adjustments, take one more frame. This is your final end frame. So in total, you will have made 34 images. Now that you've done your sequence, it's time to get to the stacking. You're going to load your images into whatever application you use to perform focus stacking. Adobe Lightroom Classic and Adobe Photoshop do this very well. Other editors may have that capability as well, but as I don't use them, I can't speak to them. Some people, including myself, will use a dedicated focus stacking application. The one that I've come to depend on is called Helicon Focus. But before you go out spending money on any other app, confirm that the editor you already have cannot do what you want. The software will take in all your images, 34 of them, and produce a single final image incorporating the sharpest detail from each of your images. Because you allocated 50% overlap of depth of field at the minimum, there should be no areas that are out of focus. Depending on the software that you've used, you may end up with a DNG or a TIFF or a PSD file. This is good because none of these are lossy compression oriented. If you use an in-camera stacking algorithm, expect to get a lossy JPEG out of your work, even if the individual images were shot in RAW, as they should always have been shot. With your final image, you can now do whatever other editing you choose to do. But note, leave your editing until after the stacking process is complete. If you follow this method, you will have a really nice image of your subject with enough depth of field for the whole thing to be sharp. There's no rocket science and no voodoo involved. It's just a mechanical process once you've found the subject and defined the composition. The only additional hardware that you may not have will be at least a single axis macro focusing rail. While my example focused on close-up subjects, focus stacking will work with any lens at any camera-to-subject distance, but because of diminished depth of field is most commonly used when the per-image depth of field is marginal, and that happens most often in close-up photography. As you've probably figured, unless you have lots of light, the shutter open times are going to be longer, so if subject movement is an issue, you will want to be supplementing with either a continuous light source or a flash. I always advocate for flash. It's superior in so many ways. Just make sure that whatever light source you do choose is not mounted on the camera, and that it is positioned such that it doesn't get blocked as the camera moves on the rail. TTL flash works a charm in this kind of scenario, so long as you do for flash exposure compensation whatever you would have done for ambient light exposure compensation if you were using ambient light as your source. Now, someone will ask, why F16 and not F32? And if you didn't think of it, well, think of it. The answer is to reduce any impact of diffraction which occurs naturally when the smallest apertures are used. So if my smallest aperture available on the lens were F32, and I know I'm going to be stacking, I'll always try to stack using an aperture 2 stops more open than the smallest one. I want to thank everybody who listened to this episode. To support the channel, please click the Support Us on Patreon button on our website. Or if you're a subscriber, follow the link in the email that you received with the episode. Huge thanks to all the folks who have already become Patreon supporters. If you shop at B&H Photo Video, please use the link on the main page as it pays a small commission here and costs you nothing at all. Please submit a comment or send in a question. I read and respond to all. On behalf of the channel, I wish you peace and good health. I've been Ross, and I'll speak to you again soon.